Okay, this morning we'll be in chapter 31 of 1 Samuel. It's a short little chapter, 13 verses, but there's a lot of meat in it. And some would think, well, this is coming to the end of something. It is. It's coming to an end of an era or an age in David's life. It was the end of Saul, but Saul was again in shadow and type to teach us things in our life spiritually. I'll read it and we'll back up and get into it. Now the Philistines fought hard against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines, and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard after Saul and upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. Then said Saul to his armor-bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." But his armor-bearer would not, because he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor-bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died and his three sons and his armor-bearer, and all his men that same day together. And when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley, and they that were on the other side of Jordan, saw that the men of Israel fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled. And the Philistines came and dwelt in them. And it came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent it into the land of the Philistines round about, to publish it in the house of their idols and among the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan and came to Jabesh and burnt them there. And they took their bones and buried them under a tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. Short little sweet chapter, but there's got some bite in it. We ended up chapter 30, and there was 13 experiences that David sent the gifts to. talking of a total experience in his life of all the things he needed to experience to bring him in a place where now he could be set as king. Do you understand that? In his life, he had to experience all these things so he could come into a place of maturity so he could operate where God wanted him to operate. And it said, now the Philistines, in verse 1 of chapter 31, the Philistines fought against Israel. And what would we say the Philistines were again? If the ites in the line, in the mind. And they fought against the men of Israel. And they fled from the Philistines, and they fell down slain in Gilboa. Now, Gilboa means a fountain of evolution. Literally, it talks about boiling emotions. Okay? It's emotional things. So what really killed the men of Israel? Their emotions. They couldn't think straight because of fear and all these other emotions. And when we get these emotions in our life, like what Ed was speaking of this morning, what did it do to your thinking process, Ed, when that fear hit you? Paralyzed you. Blew all the circuitry in your thinking, didn't it? That's what happens here. When we as children of God, children of Israel, okay, guess what? Our circuitry isn't working anymore. Our thinking process doesn't work when we're in fear. We're only thinking about one thing. When we are in fear, what are we thinking about? One thing. Self. Self-preservation. And Jesus taught us very clearly in the Gospels that if we seek to save our spirit, our soul, what are we going to do? You're going to lose it. So when we get in fear, we're trying to figure out a way to preserve ourselves. Wrong thinking. See, we're not trusting in God. Perfect love does what? It casts out all fear. See, if you love God in a perfect way in His creation as He told us to do, what would be bothering you? When you come to this understanding that God is in control of all things, me worrying about somebody jumping around a corner and hit me in the head, would that change anything except my blood pressure? Well, that's all it's going to change, isn't it? It's going to get me all excited and my blood pressure or stress on me, you know, it won't do you any good. But these men fell down in Mount Gilboa. They went to a place of those high emotions. And guess what? They went down. They died. When they fell down, slain, it said. That's dying. The what? The thought processes in the carnal mind. They're the ites in the land. All the different ites through the scriptures. Things in the mind. And the ites, the Philistines, pursued, not followed hard upon, but pursued Saul. Saul's name means desired, and he was an Edomite. An Edomite, you can follow it right on through the language, and guess what it ends up to? An Adam. Speaking about the flesh. So the thoughts of the carnal mind, guess what they're doing? They're pursuing after your what? If they're pursuing after you, they're pursuing after your thought process, you know, your whole mind, your whole body. They're trying to pursue and kill you. They want to put themselves in control of you. And upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan. That's his God-given, that means God-given son. He was a God-given son. And Abinadab, which is grace, generosity or grace, and Malchishua, I think I said that close to right, Saul's son, which speaks of wealth and his riches. So they're trying to take everything away from you. Taking all your stuff. They're taking the grace of God, all your wealth, riches, taking everything. Take your heritage, your and that's what the Philistines or those thoughts in your mind does. They steal your heritage, they steal the grace of God in your life, and they steal all the wealth that God would give you. Absolutely, the same pattern that Job's life was in. Everything will be taken away because of one thing, fear, which was emotions. And Job's whole life went in the turmoil it went in because God had introduced Job and said, he's a man upright, loves God, and hates evil. He's perfect in all the ways, all his ways. But there was one thing wrong. He had fear in his life. He had not been tested and proven that he could trust God yet because of things. And that's the same thing going on here in the Israelites' lives. And the battle went bad against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. And then Saul said unto his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, because he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. What did Saul do? He committed suicide. Why did he commit suicide? Because of the thoughts in his head of a fear of what might happen to him. He did not trust God. If he truly believed God, but see, he didn't obey God from the beginning. He was doing his own thing. That's why Samuel came to him and told him that God ripped the kingdom from his hand that day. But it's all these things. What did you say? He did what the people, well... Right, he did whatever he thought was best for the people. He wasn't concerned with what God said, and that's why he lost the kingdom, and that's why he's going in the process he's at right now. He's afraid of what's going to happen. See, the fear, the emotions are there, and the emotions caused all the men of Israel to fall down slain, didn't it? Emotions killed them. Would you agree to that? Okay, so guess what it did to Saul? Is Saul any different than the rest of the people? It's telling me that leadership has no special pass. See, most people think preachers got some special pass, you know, do not pass go, you know, the do not collect $200 and don't go to jail or get out of jail free card or something. Preachers don't get a bit of that, see. If anything, I think that ministry has a much more of accountability than anyone else. That they are held more accountable, more responsible than anybody. I didn't say they were more responsible. I said they're held more responsible. There's a difference in the word. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't think most of ministry are responsible, but they're in a place of responsibility. They should be, but they're not. They'd try to hang them around me, I guarantee you. It's okay. But Saul did this out of fear. He was afraid of what he might have to go through. If God is behind all things, and you truly believe this, tell me how anyone could scare you. He didn't have a relationship with God. He had a relationship with the law, rules and regulations. This is what God's trying to teach us. Have a relationship with Him. Trust in Him. And guess what? Fear will never have an inroad into your life. You hear what I'm saying? It's you got to have this intimacy. I think, Ed, you said something. You said you got away from something that you needed that relationship with God. That's why that fear crept into you. Right? That's the same thing this book is teaching. That we need to have that intimate relationship with God ourselves so that we can understand that when I hear God firsthand speaking to me, do you think I have any doubts about what He said? Now, if someone comes to me and says, you know what God told me, and blah, 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 tell me what God said, I can say, let me think about that. Because I didn't hear it, did I? It was secondhand. What do they call that? Hearsay in the law system? And that's just hearsay. So I don't need hearsay. I want to hear it myself. And when I hear it myself, then I have no doubts in my mind. And when you hear from God yourself, then you will have no doubts in your mind, and fear and emotions has no place to contradict what God's doing in your life. And emotions will do nothing more than contradict and separate you from the course that God sets you on. And if we can get away from these emotions, everybody has emotions. I have emotions, but my emotions do not control me. I mean, I could have feelings, well, if I do this, it's probably going to hurt. Well, if I got to do it, I got to do it, and I'm going to go on. No matter what it feels like, it's something I have to do, I go on. And that's the way you have to do it. Jesus had emotions. He wept, didn't he? He was happy at times. That's emotions. But those emotions did not take him from his course that the Father had put him on. And there's the whole thing. Fine to have emotions as long as they don't control you. You control your emotions. And then you won't have to worry about being slain through those. Saul let his emotions run loose, and they destroyed him. And that's what he's trying to teach us out of this place here. Okay, verse 5. And when his armor-bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. Why did he do that? Now, I'm not interested in a natural reason. Why did Saul's armor-bearer commit suicide because Saul committed suicide? I'm saying, what is the spiritual principle that I can learn behind this armor-bearer dying?
Anybody?
That's a good one. They're all good thoughts. First of all, this man had no identity. An armor bearer has no identity. What is his identity? Was in who? Was in Saul. So he was blindly leading, being led. Never thought. He just reacted to what he was told. See, just told whatever he was told. That's it. Do it. See, he never had an identity with God, and that's what happens under the law. And Saul represents the old order under the law. The law has just been dealt with in David's life. Okay? And so now David's going to come to a new covenant. There's been some bloodshed. It takes bloodshed to seal the covenant. And now the new covenant is going to come to fruition in his life because of this. This chapter is setting up the next book of 2 Samuel to go on in his life. Okay? He also, because of the lack of identity, felt that when his leader died, I might as well die too. I have no hope. Because his hope was in humanity. His hope was in a natural man versus the Spirit of God. When you have your trust in God, guess what? You don't have to worry about what happens. Because what does it say in Romans 8, 29, 30, and 31? To whom he foreknew, he did predestine, conform to the image of his son. I can't quote it all. But it doesn't make any difference. We're not afraid of anything. Whatever he wants, God's going to get. Right? So, we don't worry about a leader dying. I've asked this question here before. We come here and we meet in this place. And there's times there's been a lot of us here and times when there's been a whole lot less than we even here now. That doesn't make any difference, does it? Now I ask this question that I've asked for years. If I was to leave right now and walk out this door and never return, what's going to happen in your life? You better think about it, see. You don't come here because Dave is your supply. God is your supply, and you come here because I'm giving you what God wants you to have right now. But the purpose of you coming here is not just to sit here and let me feed you like a bunch of baby birds. The purpose is to show you how you can do it for yourself so that you can go and feed yourself and others also. See, that's the purpose God has in our life. I'm not trying to gather up a bunch of people so I can say, I got a big church. Hey, it's got nothing to do with God's purpose in this life. It's to teach you how to have an intimate relationship with your Father. And if you have that, so you won't count on anybody else. You'll trust on the God within you. So when you get out and you get isolated and things happen, you'll say what Job said, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Doesn't make any difference. I'll trust him. There's no compromise in you, see. That's a wonderful understanding when you get there. And we got to go through a lot of stuff to get there. Okay? Saul evidently didn't have the heart to get there. And verse 6, it goes on to says with this, so Saul died and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men that same day together. What does that tell you? Saul and his three sons and his armor bearer and all the men that same day, they all died. What's that tell you? Nobody had a relationship with God in this old order. Nothing from the old order can walk into the new order. The old man is dead. Hello. Let me tell you something. It says about Jesus when he died upon the cross, he was the last Adam. Guess what? That's the old man. You know what? There is no old man today. It's only an illusion in your mind. You think that because you've been trained that there's an old man controlling you. If Jesus was the last Adam, according to the scriptures, it says that, doesn't it? Well, then how can you blame Adam being some problem in your life? Hello. See? It's a lack of identity. We've lost our identity. When you find out you're truly sons of God, we're all children of the Most High God. Psalm 82, verse 6. We're all children of the Most High God, but we don't believe it. If I believe that I am a son of God, how will I act, Raymond? As a God man. If I believe I'm just an old sinner saved by grace, what am I going to do? I'm going to be an old sinner sinning and quoting the verse of God save me. Okay. I won't act like a man of God if I don't believe I'm a man of God. Will you act like a man or woman of God if you don't believe you are? As long as you think that you're inferior to Jesus, you're shorting yourself. He's your older brother. If you've got an older brother, are they better than you? Are they, Keith? Well, then Jesus wasn't any better than us. When people tried to worship Jesus in the time he walked on this earth, what did he tell them? Don't you do that. Don't you worship me. You worship God. Don't you worship a man. Don't you worship anybody in humanity. You worship Christ. Okay. Always give it back to the Father. He allowed that. He said, let it be so at this time. She has anointed me for my burial. She was anointing him for his burial that was coming up. That was all. It hadn't come to pass yet. He was still walking. He hadn't been death and resurrection hadn't come yet. It was all setting up parables. That's why it was done. But you have to realize when the old man goes down, everything about it must die. See, I can't say, okay, Adam's dead, but I'm going to keep all my carnal ways of thinking. I'm going to keep this thing about fear, or I'm going to keep this thing about pride. Well, that's having a relationship with a dead person. And you know what? Even in our country, that's called illegal. Can't do those things. You can't have an intimate relationship with a dead body. And Saul is dead. He died. When are we going to believe that our old man died? How many people believes it? Quit trying to blow life back in that old dead body. It's gone. Adam's dead. And when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley and they that were on the other side of the Jordan saw that the men of Israel fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. Boy, there's a piece of meat there. When the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley and they that were on the other side of Jordan saw that the men on the other side of the river Jordan, that they fled, who does this represent? There were some people on one side of the river and some on the other side. The ones on the east side were fleeing, okay, and the ones on the other side were watching. Who would that represent to you? They're both men of Israel. One on one side of the river and one on the other. The ones that fled, working in fear, we know obviously they're on the wrong side of the river. Huh? Yeah, they're on the wrong side of the river. That's the natural, carnal thinking. But the ones that are on the other side of the river looking back at them, watching them flee, had to be the ones that were, like Hebrews 11 said, we are compassed about by so great a cloud of witnesses. It's the first fruit looking and seeing, guys, look, we've already won the battle, you know. Our big brother won the battle for us. Come on over, you know. They don't want to come across that river Jordan, which represents death, okay? And they saw the men of Israel had fled, and Saul and his sons were dead. They forsook the city. I wonder what city that might be. The heavenly New Jerusalem. And the Philistines came and dwelt in them. And that word cities right there, plural, is not plural. It's a singular word. So guess what? They forsook the city, the heavenly Jerusalem, and the Philistines came and dwelt in it. Hello? You know who the heavenly Jerusalem is? You. When we run in fear and those emotions are running, guess what's going to come and dwell in us? The Philistines, the ites are going to come to the land, into the mind. Oh, yeah, for a season. Yeah, the ones that were watching. No, they're seeing the other man flee in fear. People that didn't want to come across the River Jordan. The River Jordan is a place of death, which separates actually the Passover and Pentecostal experience from the Tabernacle's experience. And the ones on the one side, they were all men of Israel, but there were some of them on this side of the river looking across to the ones that were running in fear and all those emotions. Do you understand that now?
Yeah, but it says so many people died, and all of them are not being together, too.
Mm-hmm. All the ones that fled.
Okay, so they are keeping them fleeing, and then did they die after?
Well, they were being killed. Okay. The enemy was killing them.
So could that represent Abraham and Abraham?
Sure. Sure can. There's so many allegories that you could bring that into from different angles. There's just all kinds of views of it, and they're all correct. Okay, and it came to pass on the what? It came to pass when? Now look here. I'm going to write something on the board so you can see this. It came to pass not on the morrow, but. What's the word?
Tomorrow.
Okay. To be tomorrow, there has to be something prior to this, which is? Okay, today. So it said, so if you numbered this would be 1 and 2, wouldn't it? Has to be 2 days, correct? Has to be 2 days mentioned here. He's saying tomorrow, he's talking about 2. When the Philistines came to strip the slain. When are the Philistines going to strip the slain? Right here. Okay. What day is that? When your emotions are running high in Pentecost, that's when you're going to be stripped of everything you have. You're going to lose your head. You're going to lose your identity in Christ. Saul was slain. His head was cut off. Was it not? Pentecost is the very thing that's going to deceive you. It's going to take you out there in your emotions, and you're going to lose your identity. You won't know who you are. You'll be caught up in all these emotions. You'll lose your identity. You'll lose your everything around you. So you better get across the river. You're going to die on that side, so why don't you do it for the right reason? Why sit over there and let them kill you when you can cross the river to die and enter into eternal life? I mean, well, it don't make sense. You're going to die anyway. Why don't you do it for a good reason? Or how about a God reason? Okay? And it said when they did this, the Philistines came and dwelt in it. In here. The fear lets them in. And it came to pass on the morrow when the Philistines came to strip the slain that they found Saul and his three sons fallen in where? In Gilboa. Gilboa is that place of boiling emotions, isn't it? And that's speaking of Pentecost, isn't it? So you'll find the old man dies someplace. He'll either die in Pentecost and move on to Tabernacles through the crucifixion and resurrection, or he'll die there in the desert because of his emotions. He'll be comfortable, stay there. And that's another thing about this Gilboa. Not Gilboa. Where is it at? Think of the word. Jabesh. It's a place of comfort. I mean, dry, confusion, shame. There's another place of comfort. A place of ease. What is that one? Bethshan. Yeah, Bethshan, place of ease. So, I'll get to that in a minute. Getting ahead of myself. So his sons had fallen in Mount Gilboa, which is that place of emotions, in that high place of emotions. What is a mountain? It's a high place. So that high place, what is our high place in us? It's the mind right up here. And in that high place where the emotions start, right up here, is what caused the death of all of them. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent it into the land of the Philistines, and to publish it in the house of their idols or their images. Wonder where that's at. When those ites run through the land, those Philistines, those thoughts in our mind, and bring all that fear to us, they're showing, look here, got your identity, I got your armor, I've got your sons, I've got everything about you. How many people's heard those things in your own mind? Every one of us has heard it. We've been accused by the accuser. You can't do anything. There is no such thing as God. There's all this stuff that comes into our mind. Why? Because of emotions. There's emotions in us that deceive us. Nothing wrong with emotions as long as they don't control you. But they wanted to publish it in the house of their idols and the people. The word among isn't even there. So in the house of their idols and the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth. Does anybody know what Ashtaroth means? It's a female fertility god. Okay? It was, if you look in Acts chapter 12, verse 4, you'll find a word there called Easter. Astarte, excuse me, Ashtaroth, it all points back to this Ashtaroth poles that they had for worship. It's a fertility thing. And it goes all the way through scriptures. All of this about Easter comes from that same thing. It goes back to this Ashtaroth poles of the Old Testament. It's the wooden poles they had up, obelisks, phallic symbols. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, in the fertility gods, in the I'm trying to think of the word I'm trying to get out of my mind. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, the false fertility goddess, female goddess. And they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. That's the house of ease. Where was the flesh attached?
To the wall.
Of what? But what does Bethshan represent again?
Comfort.
A place of comfort, ease. I've got a saying I've used for years. The path of least resistance makes rivers and men crooked. See, that place of ease. If I'm in a place that nothing is going on in my life, there's two reasons why that's happening. One of two reasons. Either God is not dealing with my life at all, or else I'm in a place called Elam. It's a place of rest. Sometimes we need that little place of rest and encouragement before the battle, you know, before we go back to the desert again. So we need that little place of comfort. So, guaranteed, in anyone's life that is seeking after God, you're going to be in a desert situation. every man or woman of this Bible who served God spent time in the desert. And a desert is a dry place. It's a place you can get confused in because everything looks the same. Every grain of sand is identical. It's just sand. You can lose your direction there quickly, can't you? There's not much to drink there. We've all been in that place spiritually where it's pretty dry. Very solitary place. And there's the time when we have to do one of two things. While we're in this desert experience of our walk of our life, we can either get bitter or we can get better. We can take and have this inward seeking of God while we're in this place of isolation, or we can feel sorry for ourselves. Which one do you think you ought to be doing? You should be finding out what God's got me in this desert for. What am I supposed to learn in this experience? Instead of feeling sorry for ourselves, find out why I'm here. If you have a mind that inquires, you'll do just fine. If you think, God's working in you. Most people do not use their mind. They do not think. They do not challenge anything they hear. They just take it and run with it because it's easy. It's a comfortable way, correct? So the flesh is attached to the easy way, isn't it? They do what's best for them. Still want to worship the flesh? Well, here they were trying to destroy it, and this was the Philistines doing this. They're trying to destroy everything, but they're still giving the impression that it's an easy way. There's an easy way to do it. Sure it was. Sure it was. They were trying to... That's why Saul killed himself in the fourth verse, because he didn't want them to desecrate his body and do those things in the fear of what they would do to torture him in that process. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard of what the Philistines had done to Saul, and Jabesh-Gilead is that place of dryness, confusion, shame, it's a rocky place, what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men rose up and went all night long. Didn't say they went day all day, they went all night. They were in darkness. They were in ignorance. And they went there for a reason. What was the reason? They came to Bethshan, the place of House of Ease, and they came to Jabesh and after they got the body and took it back there. But what were they doing? In this process of going to get the body, they went through the time of darkness to come and take the bodies off the wall and take them back where they came from, this place of ease and comfort. What were they doing? Still holding on to what? To flesh, to humanity. They were still seeing something special in this physical body. Right? They were trying to make an idol out of this physical body of a man who was their leader. See, they had no identity, did they? Their identity was in a headless man. And they went and took the headless man and brought his body back as some honorable thing to this headless man who didn't even know who he was. Didn't that sound like humanity? Yeah, and they never did know who God was because he was always external to them because the law taught him God's up in heaven, just like the church teaches people today. God's up in heaven. Well, that's contradictory to what God tells us. God said he dwells in his people. See, so something's wrong and somebody doesn't have the relationship they should have, so they're going to try to hang on to this flesh and not let it go. And rather than let these Philistines destroy this body and mock him and desecrate his body, they brought it to Bethshan, that house of ease. They went there and got it, rather, and brought him to Jabesh, which is the place of confusion and dry and shameful. And they burnt their bodies there. What would you say that was? Was it a cremation? If you burn a body, it's cremation, isn't it? So, a lot of people believe that cremation is a bad thing. If you read the book of Hosea, it's in there four or five times. The cremation is done for several reasons, and one here is so they won't desecrate the body. They can't dig it up and drag it around and be desecrating it all over the place. It's done to prevent disease, and usually it was done to people of high esteem, you know, kings, royalty. So it's not a bad thing. in a way, keeping somebody else from destroying their idols, maybe. You know, they feel like they're preserving it by destroying it. But in the book of Revelation, it says that the children of God, when they come to a point and they realize who this Babylonian whore is, they said they'll burn her flesh. They'll burn her flesh, doesn't it? They're going to find out that the flesh was really not helpful. Right? Preserve the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
So they destroyed it so someone couldn't desecrate the bodies. And see, they had too much honor they were giving to the man.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. God wouldn't give them anything to worship. He took their idol and burned it. And look at verse 13. And they took their bones and buried them under a tree. What does the tree represent?
Humanity.
They're still buried under humanity. Where's our bones at today? Under the flesh, you know. At Jabesh, that place of confusion and shame. And they fasted how long? Now, what's 7 days? Huh? How long did it take God to do things in Genesis? 7 days. And for 7 days of creation, guess what? There was a fasting, because creation didn't even know their Creator existed. So this is a time of separation from God. And guess what happens then? At the end of 7 days, was it over with? On the eighth day was a day of new beginnings. And guess what's happening right now? It's a day of new beginning for David. The old man is dead. The new man is alive. And now David is starting in a new term of his life. He's actually walking in shadow and type. He's walking into the new covenant. The same thing we have to do. We have to come to a place where we realize the old man is dead. He really did die on the cross 2,000 years ago. He has no control over me any longer. How do you think Saul controlled the people? Now, let me read you a verse again. Verse 4. And Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." What was working in his heart? Fear. Seed produces like kind. So the only thing Saul had in his heart was fear. So guess how he controlled the people? Fear, the same thing. As long as you're controlled by these emotions, you'll never know who you are. You'll never come beyond the Pentecostal experience. You've got to come beyond that. When you know your own identity, no longer will fear rule your life. Now you're free. Now you become dangerous to the religious folk. They won't like you no more because they can't control you. If they can't control you, they think you're full of some kind of devils or you're a bad person just because you use the mind God gave you. Well, it was the Philistines. The Philistines. The Philistines being symbolic of the thoughts in your carnal mind. Okay. Your mind is doing you the worst injustice of anything you can in your life. Your carnal mind accuses you of being bad every day. It brings all these crazy thoughts into our minds. And anyone on the face of this earth that says they don't hear voices in their head talking to them every day is lying. Because the mind talks to you every day. Everybody's mind talks to them. We hear these crazy thoughts in our minds. What is it? It's my carnal mind trying to destroy me. In John chapter 10 it says, the devil comes to kill, the enemy comes to kill, to steal, and to destroy. And that's not the devil with a pitchfork. It's that thing right between her ears that comes to kill and to steal and to destroy everything in our lives, to separate us from God. And the only real death there is separation from God.
Things like hearing about voices from God, that was implanted in you before you were born.
That's right. It's in there, and he can talk anytime he wants to.
It is coming from out there. It's already in there. You just listen to it.
What did Raymond say? He got the revelation that not the infilling of the Spirit, but the outflowing of the Spirit. See, there's the revelation that God was already in there. It's all within us. All we got to do is get it brought to our remembrance. He said the Holy Spirit was what's going to do it, didn't he? John 14, 26. He said, he'll call all things to remembrance whatsoever has been said to you, see? So it's not an inflowing, an infilling, but it's an outflowing of the Spirit. It's a revelation or an unveiling of the Spirit of God that's already within you. It's a wonderful thing, huh?
Right.
It's great.